Hey, everybody, and welcome to Viewing Angles, the only podcast left on the airwaves. We're finishing out our Lord of the Rings rewatch, but let's all introduce ourselves. I'm Dan. With me, we got the newcomer, the new guy, the guy who's never seen anything before. Tell the people who you are.
I'm Elmer, and I am so fucking pumped to be here. I came in with some resistance onto this show a couple episodes ago. You know, never been eager to watch these movies. They look boring as fuck. Elves are lame. Swords are not guns. It's old. You got some
that
magic.
True.
It's not my vibe, you know? Not really my thing. And then, you know, you start hearing that they're important, that they're worthy of your time. And then you look at the price tag, Dan Leo, and that price tag is hefty. It's like, what, a total of like 9 hours? 10 hours?
9.5, around that?
Nine and a half hours. Nine, like 24, I think.
And let me tell you what, Dan. 9.5 hours is not enough. I need more. I can't wait to watch more versions of this movie, whatever Peter Jackson throws on in the director's version. I'm like excited about The Hobbits. I started the Lord of the Rings Shadow of Mordor the game today.
You're all
Things
in.
Things have changed. I'm all in. I am living this lifestyle now.
Dude.
I'm one of you.
Robert, Tolkien what
slut.
About you?
Tell, I'm fucking tell, Tolkien tell, slut.
Tell the people about you. Introduce yourself.
Oh, yeah. My name's Elmer. I've been on this show, you know, watching Lord of the Rings.
Hell
you can find
yeah.
me on Twitter at Elmer Is Not Mad. I do a video game podcast with Robert called Viewing Games. You can find yep. that at...
Is it really called Oz. Viewing Games?
No. Nope.
That'd be pretty good, though. It's called Gone Gold. And you can find it
they
on
would.
Twitter at OkPaws.
If you want to name your podcast based on our podcast naming nomenclature, please just do it and then DM us.
Let you
yeah,
know.
DM us, and here's the thing. If you subscribe to our $5 tier on Patreon, you get naming rights to Viewing Angles.
You become an executive producer.
Yeah, we'll yeah. credit you as EP of the podcast. All it takes is $5 a month.
Right. You get 1% of all revenue made from the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as soon as
How
we
much
land
I have to donate
fucking...
to get a PGA title on my credit?
There you go.
That's $5. I think that works.
Okay.
Yeah, we offer a lot for $5. Yeah, you'll get like
a
nickel out of every MeUndies sponsorship that we fucking shill on this podcast.
Oh, so you treat it like stocks? Like people are buying shares?
Oh, yeah.
Right. How well do you think the podcast is gonna do?
Exactly. Yeah, you trying to buy a call? You trying to buy a put on Viewing Angles?
Somebody realized billions and start up again. Yeah. Robert, introduce yourself. Just because I don't know how to introduce multiple people.
Yeah, I'm the brains of the operation. I handle all the financials behind the podcast. You know, I run the show behind the scenes. Dan's really the face. He's got a smoother voice than I do. He can intro.
I've got a great face for radio.
Yeah, truly. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, I've got a great face for producing.
That's the meanest thing I've ever heard anyone say about themselves. Oh fuck!
Got that Rick Rubin swagger.
Oh,
hell yeah,
yeah, baby!
Yeah, Quincy Jones also produced. Yeah, producer's not that bad.
Yeah,
no, I mean yeah, Robert does have big Rick Rubin energy.
Just call yeah. me Jerry Bruckheimer.
He's more of a Butch Vig, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I consider myself a J.J. Abrams, but all right.
Yeah, I mean, you have really fucked this podcast up, so.
Got him.
Oh, Ooh. We have fun here, but the most fun has already been had. You people listening now aren't privy to what has been going on, but we've been watching Lord of the Rings, and we just finished Return of the King. Let's all just give our initial thoughts. How did this age for Robert... What did you appreciate more this time? What did you see for this viewing? And then Elmer, what are your initial thoughts? Let's go to Elmer. What are your initial thoughts on this feature, this entry, and also just at large? We'll be talking about the trilogy and Return of the King probably almost interchangeably at this point, since it's a complete package.
It is truly a complete package. What a just great way of describing this movie. Because everything in this movie is functioning at like 12 out of 10. There's so much to talk about, Dan. It's really hard. But quick thing. Robert and I noticed Return of the King kind of looks better like in the visual effects department than the last two.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. These movies are only made back, they're made back to back, so you know, like technology could have only jumped so much. But I think it's because they had probably more time with how the releases lined up, right, to edit this movie. But they also had all the experience of Lord of the Rings 1 and 2.
Exactly.
And every aspect of this movie is just like the laziest, limpest, easiest three-pointer. Like, it knows what it's doing. It figured it out. By 3, they know Fellowship, like, killed it. So they're just, this is a victory lap. It's so good.
Oh, yeah. They've got so much money, and I'm sure that anything that they needed for more people, more resources being thrown, the movie's already made enough money to cover, like, to double the budget of Return of the King.
Yeah.
But since they've already financed it, they've already paid for it, basically. All they got to do is say, whatever you need in post, do it.
We got you. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this my experience with these trilogies, man, is I'm just so in love. I definitely want to spend a good amount of time later talking about the last 20 minutes of this movie. But the craziest thing that I can't wait to dive deeper on is on my own time is just like, how the fuck did this happen? Peter Jackson had no clout. Like, why were all these actors like down to sign on with this like nobody director shirt? Like, it's obviously a good paycheck, but like to commit to three movies back to back, it's like high fantasy, it's unproven. Like, there's just, how the fuck did this happen?
I think it's like 3 years of paychecks. Honestly, if someone's like, it's almost like getting a TV show at that point.
Yeah.
Like, sure, hey, sure. Sign a deal for 3 seasons of the show. And they're doing less work than TV shows, you know?
Right.
They're doing, how, like, out of these movies, who do you think has the most like time on screen? And if they even have that, it's probably like just one whole movie or one like entire season of a TV show.
That's a good point. But just, I guess, from like an artistic angle,
mm-hmm.
Why did they trust Peter Jackson with all this money?
I have no idea. That's a good question. I think you'd have to probably get deep into the production. There's got to be books about this movie, right?
There has to be. I'm not going to read a book, Dan, but I'll find a good YouTube video, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And like, I need to know, because it just feels like the greatest, like, miracle of all time that this shit exists, and that like we're watching it basically 20 years later and it's still like S tier. Hasn't aged at all, barely.
It's overexposed
as fuck, and that shit does not look good in HD. But besides that, yeah. 10 out of 10.
Yeah, you do see some weird it is a very bright movie. And Robert, we've already seen this before, but what I couldn't help noticing was S tier. That's the perfect way to describe it, because 1 and 2 are great 4-star movies, and then Return of the King just like ups it. Like, it is the difference between 4 stars and like legendary.
Yeah, I think there's a reason that this movie is still the record holder for most Oscars ever won by a single film.
Mm-hmm. It is. It just delivers on the promise of the first one. It is so. There's so much satisfaction,
mm-hmm.
in watching a completion, a finale of a series where they've gotten better and better each time, and then it delivers on the third one. This is why every third movie is really a letdown. Like, mm-hmm. it is, I think, I can't think of any other third movie that is better than the last two. Harry Potter. Maybe it's a good example, but that doesn't count.
Yeah, because that's not a trilogy. Like, that was just another piece in the puzzle.
But I would say, Aliens, the third Alien one 3. Drops off.
Yeah.
Terminator 3 drops off.
Star Wars. All three trilogies. Actually, no, I except take that. Revenge of the Sith is the best
kind of close.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Pirates.
Yeah. Pirates is a good example.
But it doesn't even not with the level of Kobe that this trilogy has. You know, there's just something about the fact that they've gotten longer, but they're feeling shorter.
Yeah. The first two are like your team winning the championship. You know, they've done it, hard season. All the third one is like game seven buzzer beater shot, win the entire series. Like,
it's so good. Oh, man.
It is just like 3 point from deep, no time on the clock.
From Helm's
you're
deep.
Down by two, and you win by one, and then people just tear down the foundation of your city. Like, that is how good this movie is.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I can't sing the praises of this movie enough. And it really makes me wonder, too, just like, are we ever going to get a trilogy like this again? I think maybe the closest to some of the moments in this movie we've gotten is something like Endgame, but even Endgame kind of feels like, you know, there's a lot of buildup to it, but I think it was a lot of unnecessary buildup.
Imagine if you took all of the...
Yeah.
Imagine if you took the good parts of every MCU movie and just put them together. Maybe you'd have 9.5 hours of good stuff.
Right.
But this is like back to back to back to back.
They just fucking nailed the trilogy, and like it's the cohesiveness of it all, I'm sure, helped in no small part by the fact that they filmed it all back to back. That makes this like so singular within film culture.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that what do we think is closest to this in terms of like a run for a series?
Honestly, like, I think maybe the original Star Wars trilogy and then the Pirates trilogy. But I think this is better than both
of them. Or just like owning culture.
I'm talking like I'll even open it up to any like three movie run of like in a shared existence, you know? Yeah. Like I think maybe you go Chamber of Secrets, Azkaban, Goblet of Fire. That could, like, if you took that and pretended nothing else, like, that would be maybe up there. But that's...
It's solid.
Yeah.
I mean, there is something to be said about, like, Harry Potter's run, period.
Sure.
And, like, you know, there's something to be said about the first initial run of MCU where they had some novelty and we didn't realize how much we were, you know, selling our souls quite yet. But, like, to just actually be... good, you know, and be this like big and popular and like approachable is nuts,
insane. Yeah, I would think maybe the first three James Bond movies, Dr. No, From Rush with Love, Goldfinger. Now that's a run.
That's a run.
I can't judge those because I've never seen those.
Really? That should be our next. We watch after this. We watch all 25 James Bond movies.
Ghost Protocol, Rogue Nation, Fallout.
All right. There you
go. That's a fucking run.
That is a run. That's a real good run.
I think that's
run.
The only thing. That's,
that's the best day? 4, 5, 6 of any movie. Like, let's...
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think though, like that's a solid 3-movie run, but I think what makes Lord of the Rings so impressive is that it is like cohesive. It all builds on each other, and there's so much setup in Fellowship for payoff in Return of the King. Whereas, like, you know, like 4, 5, 6, Mission Impossible, they're all good, but they don't really build off each other in any way.
They're all one-offs. Yeah, no, I get what you're saying.
A little bit. They're like soft. It's a soft reboot, I think, after 4, you know.
You see the wife from Mission Impossible 3.
I guess. Point being, though, like, it's also kind of crazy that, like, the subject matter is one book, you know? Like, this was all
Return of the King
to Peter Jackson and team's credit. Like, the formatting and structuring and figuring out the pacing and editing this down to a fucking 9.5-hour movie.
It's adapted. Yeah, it is one of the best adaptations of a epic ever.
Yeah,
I can't think of anything else that, you know, Game of Thrones, like, first three seasons, maybe, actually, like, would... go up and up against Lord of the Rings. Yeah. I think when we were at like the third season ends with the Red Wedding, we're kind of like, well, I guess this is it. This is the successor. And then fourth season, we're like, yes, here we keep going. And then fifth season, we're like, I don't know about this. And it kept kind of going down after there. But to end on such a hot note, after building for 2 years, nothing. I can't think of anything. Like, I would really like people to comment on this, tweet at us what possibly could go up against this. Maybe
let us
Pirates.
Know, I do want to know what trilogies other people hold in the same regard as like Lord of the Rings, because I'm very interested to see what else people consider that good. But yeah, Lord of the Rings is just
Godfather, mate. Like this is.
But
like
even
but
part three sucks.
I don't think part three sucks. I think it's good, but it is so like
Sofia Coppola fucked it up.
She didn't do it any favors. But imagine if Return of the King came out. Like, imagine if Fellowship was as good as Return of the King was, and then Return of the King was as good as like even just a little bit
worse.
So you than
think
Fellowship.
Godfather was like the inverse of Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, like where I think that the first two, people can argue about which one is better, but those first two are on the level of Return of the King. They're masterpieces.
Yeah.
And then the third one is just, this is a good movie, but I don't know why I don't know why this was made.
Yeah.
You know?
Completely
unnecessary. They already did it. So why, but I think in terms of quality, they might equal out a little bit if you aggregate the quality.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. I don't think it comes close, but I think you've made a good point. Yeah, man.
I'm talking pound for pound.
Like the Star Wars trilogy, the Pirates trilogy gets close. It's the obvious ones. I think Godfather obviously belongs in the conversation. But I can't imagine. Oh, you know, maybe the Before trilogy.
Okay, yeah, there you go. That's,
you know,
that's what I'm fucking talking about.
I was trying
about.
To think of one that like isn't an obvious one.
That is yeah. A perfect trilogy.
Yeah, other than that.
Damn, fucking checkmate.
Yeah.
Right. So we've already defined the singularness of not only this movie, but its trilogy. I think it's, I'm glad that we're all in agreement on this. And Elmer, I'm glad this is your first time watching this, so that we can kind of be, because sometimes you have a feeling about a movie and you need like a gut check of someone to be like, I've never seen this before. Let me tell you if it's good or not. So we appreciate having you on.
Yeah, thank you for validating. Thank you for validating our opinions.
Yeah, that's what you're here for.
I mean, on my side too, it is so helpful to go into these movies with a guide, because I understand if you're watching them. I don't know. Even then, though, the internet was young and all. You know, like, how much were moms really getting, or you know, asking some of the questions I was asking Robert? Like, I do think you know, I was asking them like lore questions, right? Just because I was curious. Mm-hmm. And I guess to the general public, like shit like that doesn't matter too much. And the story, like, you know, the four A plots or whatever are pretty easy to follow. There's enough like emotional drama that it's doable. But it's still nice going into these movies with a guide and knowing like, there's so many names, dude. It's just a lot. It's overwhelming.
There is a lot, and they all sound the same.
Yeah.
Like Boromir, his brother is Faramir. You're like, oh my God.
Saruman.
And everyone's got a beard and long hair.
That's fucking Tolkien's fault, though. Like, I don't know why he felt the need to name everybody so similarly.
Because he came up with like a language and a naming convention. He delves deep.
I mean, he is a crazy person.
He is. He was an insane man who gave us just another mythology to work with.
Yeah.
Fucking that's fine. You guys ready for the categories?
Yeah, let's play some
games.
Let's
hit it.
Let's play some games. All right. The Lord of the Ring. Who was the Lord of the Ring this movie? Who's the MVP?
There's only one answer.
I think we all know.
It's Samwise Gamgee.
It's Samwise Gamgee.
Dude, Samwise fucking Gamgee.
It's hero. The movie, yeah.
He is
the
last. I left the last
posters. That is the most offensive bullshit.
Yeah, it is kind of upsetting to see him not like in the marketing material at all. Although I'm kind of glad, because like it makes him seem so much more unassuming when you're watching the movies, not seeing him as a character on the posters. And like when
Sam
he gets,
wouldn't want to be on the posters.
Yeah. Like even Frodo, like in Two Towers, when he's talking about just like the stories they'll write about Frodo, and Frodo's mm-hmm. like, nah, dude, they're gonna write stories about you, fucking Sam the Brave.
Samwise the Brave. Yeah,
it's so Fuck. Sweet. But just those that moment when they're actually on Mount Doom, and the MVP moment for me when it all crystallizes is just when he's looking at Sam, or he's looking at Frodo, and he's like, Frodo's dehydrated, he's on the brink of death. I can't carry that burden, but I can carry you. And he just fucking potato sacks him over his shoulders and just like keeps climbing up the mountain. I'm like, fuck yeah. This is the hypest moment out of all the battles. Every moment in Lord of the Rings, this is the hypest moment in the franchise. And just like you see, Sean Austin gets, I don't think he gets enough credit for his role as Sam, because he fucking kills it. And you just see the emotion in his face when he like lifts Sam, or lifts Frodo up and starts carrying up the mountain. His eyes are like bleeding and red. He's sweaty. He's exhausted. And I'm like, God damn it, man.
They show like the opening of where they need to go, and it's still so far away.
Yeah.
That's what I kept forgetting. Every time they show like, well, that's where we got to go. For Frodo, it's always miles away. Like, yep. It's always so fucking far. And they're just breezing through it while everyone else is just sitting there like, oh, he won the battle. That was pretty cool. You know, let's wait a week. Sam and Frodo are fucking trucking it down. My Samwise moment, my favorite, is when Frodo is already almost betrayed. Like, Sam, he's like, I'm taking the ring. It's mine. And Gollum bites his finger off, and they tussle, and Gollum flies over the side, and Frodo is hanging over, and he tries to like grab his hand, and he kind of like he misses it, and he goes back, and then Sam's like, "Don't you let go?"
Yeah,
and he's looking at him, be like, "Whatever you do, don't let go." And I'm like, "Hurt!" Like Sam's been through so much.
God, Sam's the fucking best.
I'm going to, as soon as we stop this podcast, I'm going to go start Return of the King again.
Not a bad call.
Oh, God. Not a bad call. There's still time before 1 a.m. Oh, God. It is MVP. Elmer, do you agree? I feel like.
There's no question. Like, from my Sam moment was, you know, it's a certain point in this movie, you start, you know, you have a complicated relationship with Gollum. You feel so much empathy and sadness for him. You feel bad for him. He's in an abusive relationship with himself. But when he throws the fucking sandwich off the cliff, he lost all points he had. You know? That was the last straw for me. And when that whole exchange with Sam and Smeagol and just fucking like trying so hard to deal with like I don't want Frodo to get too mad at me or riled up because he's weak and like I need to stay around to look after him. But also this fucking rat can't be trusted.
Yeah.
And the sadness when he wipes the crumbs off his shirt that you know was a
Lebus bread
planted.
Yeah, that Gollum planted. It's just like he's just so sad because he's like, I can't do anything.
Yeah.
I'm
not in charge. It's tragic. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's tragic. Sam, I think we can all agree. MVP by a long shot. And it's so great that it's Frodo gives him the book and it's like the last few chapters, the last few pages are for you.
Yeah.
You got to finish this out. It's
so wholesome.
And I feel like I love that we all chose Sam too. I'm happy we came to this consensus because this is the same movie where Legolas like single-handedly takes down a war elephant, but Sam is still the MVP.
Because of his power of love. I mean, that's the thing,
dude. Like, you could give it to Andy Serkis, too, because, again, I mean, I think Two Towers is the one where he really shines, but, you know, he kills it here, too. I think, I always forget, a Green Book guy.
Viggo Mortensen.
I think he's putting in work. He's going a little hard sometimes, but I think it usually pays off well. Like, everyone in this movie is good. Gandalf? Are you kidding me?
Oh yeah, murdering it.
Oh, actually, I think the true contenders that we need to talk about are Merry and Pippin. They get real close. Like, Samwise is like the best of all of us and all and everyone. But Merry and Pippin's arc, the payoff we're given with these two shitty fucking characters from Fellowship of the Ring is incredible. It is so fucking sad, and they are the most, like, because they're actually in the war, I think they play to, like, the themes of World War II the strongest. Like, with Frodo and Samwise, you get the whole, like, you know, the people you're never going to thank. The people that aren't okay after this shit. They just, like, kind of disappear into life. But then to see the other side of, like, oh, this is, like, what, like, in a conflict you recognize war. There's just so much more sadness and weight placed on these characters, and, like, they're fucking halflings. It's, ugh.
The happy-go-lucky guys.
Yeah,
and especially Merry, who is more the more serious one. You would kind of imagine, oh, maybe he'll be. It's Pippin, the biggest goofball, who ends up becoming our child sent to war. We're like, he's not cut out for this. He can't do this to this guy. Yeah. Like, you know.
But I love that, like, he just represents that, like, that idealism that people had signing up for the draft in World War II, where it's like, yeah, they're just like, I just want to go on an adventure. Like, I just want to go see the world. And then it's like, you don't know what you signed up for, but the fate of civilization rests on your shoulders now. So good luck.
Truly awful.
Shout out to that scene where Pippin is just singing while the king is eating, sending Faramir to his death.
Yeah. Like, sing me a song.
Oh, fucking hell. We're not going to get a scene like that in a blockbuster again.
Oh, yeah. As they play the music and they're just charging at them. And then you see the orcs kind of, like, stir a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on? And they all just start looking. And then the scene, they have a wide shot of the set and all the orcs kind of go up. And then all of their bows just come up. You can hear the sound of the wood creaking, and you just know everyone is going to die.
Yeah, everyone's going to die. No, you hear the super somber song with no instrumental, and the only other sound effects you hear are the king just fucking munching on his meal.
Just like, yeah.
The most MVP to him, too, because he was Denethor, so believable as a piece of shit.
Oh, God. Absolute garbage.
Oh, man.
All right, well, let's move on to the next category, the depths of Middle Earth. Who is the scariest, most intimidating villain? Throw out a few. Definitely nominees. Shelob, the giant spider / goddess witch thing.
Yeah.
Very impressive VFX.
You'll learn more about the goddess witch aspect in Shadow of Mordor.
Oh, yeah. Exciting.
Yeah.
Right. She's a corporeal being who takes the form of the spider. And, okay, and more, the armored trolls that fuck things up in Minas Tirith.
Yeah, when they break through the fucking wall.
Yeah. The Witch King. Definitely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The main head orc with the fucked up, like,
the white face.
Yeah, the white face boy.
The war elephants.
The war elephants, definitely scary. And I'll throw Gollum in there, because especially during the opening, it is one of the great openings of all time, where we start, oh, this is nice, and then we see that one of them is Gollum, and we're like, this is about to be not nice.
Yeah, when you recognize that it's Andy Serkis.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, man. Yeah, I love that monologue, too, when Gollum is just like, this isn't the first time you've killed a man.
Oh, exactly. It's terrifying.
Gollum's my winner, dude. Because in this movie, like I said, you hit certain beats in this movie where it's like, I don't care how sad this is, you're putting the good halflings in harm's way.
Yeah, and I think it's... He's scary because he's not, like, physically intimidating, but he's so fucking mischievous.
Well, I think it also goes back to, I think I might have said it in the Fellowship episode, but we've seen everyone do really badass shit, except Frodo and Samwise. You know?
Yeah.
They're brave and, like, heroes, but they're not looking cool doing it. Everyone else has looked cool doing shit. And you know the halflings are, like, exhausted and need to sleep. And yes. I don't know what Gollum's sleeping schedule is, but it doesn't look good. I don't like it. That dude, that's just like the biggest threat throughout the movie.
Yeah, and it's impending, and you know it's going to happen. We've been privy to some of the internal dialogue between Gollum and Smeagol, and it doesn't look good for the hobbits.
No,
I forgot my choice in the nominees, but the scene when they catapult
the severed heads so fucking
over.
Good.
Oh. That rattled me. I knew it was coming too, but it rattled me more than I thought it would. Now that I'm older, I was just like, oh my god, that's the most
terrifying.
Fucked up thing. Like, that's almost an R rating. I think that's an R rating now.
Yeah, I don't know how these movies got away with being PG-13.
That is the wildest thing holdup wise about these movies. I know, like, in the first two specifically, the second one more than anything, they get away with decapitating orcs because they're not real people.
Yeah.
But they're tossed human heads over. Like, is it... I think also, like, the restrictions must have changed a little bit over the years because I don't know that would fly today. But is it because they have no blood? Is it because, like, you didn't see the decapitation? Like, there's... It's all arbitrary. It like makes it more obvious that the rating system is bullshit.
Right. That they're like, well, since the heads didn't have, you know, blood coming out of them, it's like they're motherfucking heads.
No, I'm telling you, it's because we've gotten so used to what a Disney PG-13 looks like.
Yeah, I think that's legitimately a really good point.
Yeah. Where they might say shit sometimes, but
they don't even say shit in those movies.
In Age of Ultron, they make a big stink about how Captain America says shit or something.
The language bit. Yeah, I remember. I thought he said ass or damn or something. Whatever. But the point is, we don't see severed heads in Disney movies.
True.
No,
yeah,
like,
not
they
yet.
Don't have to they don't have to appear. Warner Brothers, especially at the time, didn't have to appear super Christian. Now everyone has to appear this way to play the fucking Disney game and compete. But
to play the China.
I mean,
game.
This. Yeah. But I also think there is that wholesome angle too in America that is fucking us. But this is more fucked up than a lot of R-rated movies.
Yes, 100%.
This movie is dark and like. I don't want it to have an R rating. You know, like it just does what it needs to do. Like I never was like, oh, there's no blood. Because sometimes you watch movies and you're like. Come on.
Right.
You know, like
you see someone get shot and there's no bullet
hole. And you just
shot
that guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And he just died after you shot him in the stomach. That's not how that goes. He's going to be alive for a little bit.
Yeah. This movie got away with straight up murder.
Oh, goddamn. Yeah, dude. What about you, Rob? What's your choice for the scariest, most intimidating villain?
I don't know. I mean, part of me wants to say the Witch King because he is like iconic and super fucking cool, and he kills Theoden. But I do think Gollum was more unsettling just because like he was so scheming, and like he gets to that point where, you know, he's successfully able to turn Frodo against Sam. And I'm like, I think that's more impactful as a villain than somebody who just like rides a fucking dragon and has a cool helmet.
Yeah. Cool helmet that doesn't even protect their face.
Yeah. Well, it would have protected his face against a man.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a good bit. I did like that bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll do this lore check right now. But in the lore, so the Witch King's been around for a while, the leader of the Ring Race, the Nazgul. And in a previous war with the elves, there was a high elf named Fingolfin, and they basically had this fight, this like war, and then eventually they had to throw away, like the Witch King had to leave. Mm-hmm. He was banished, and this elf had a prophecy who said he's going to be banished from here forever. And he will not, and he will fall, his destruction will not be by the hand of a man. And the Witch King knew about the prophecy, and he knew that, like, okay, that's just how it's going to happen. But as he says, like, I'm not going to die from by a man.
Yeah.
I'm going to survive. And then Eowyn's like, I am not a man.
That's what make the Witch King so confident, was knowing the prophecy of, like, oh yeah, no man can kill me.
Right. That's why he wanted to kill Gandalf, because Gandalf's not a man. He's the only thing that's not a man there.
It's such a badass, like, rewriting of fucking the narrative. Like, just reframing it completely.
Dude, Tolkien was a feminist before it was cool.
Yeah.
Is it true?
I don't know.
Is really it true? Just,
maybe.
I'm going by, like, the narrative that he wrote us.
True. Yeah, that's the only thing that we could really pull together. All right. The next category is Ham It Up. Who's got the hammiest acting in this movie, guys? This might be one of the tougher ones, because it's played so straight.
It is. And, like, I don't feel like anybody was really hamming it up too bad in this movie.
We might have the same answer. Mine is Denethor.
I don't know who that is.
He's Faramir's dad, who gets set on fire.
The Mad King.
I think he's going pretty hard, like,
munching those grapes.
Just even that eating scene is absolutely disgusting. Eating a cherry tomato by biting it in half and not just sticking the whole thing in your mouth. What the fuck? Like,
yeah. What is wrong
with you? Yeah. Wipe your face, you fucking animal. Like,
he's a king. Oh, he doesn't have to. He has servants.
He's a steward. He's a steward.
Well,
he's not a king.
That's what Gandalf calls him. But he's a king until fucking Aragorn returns.
Yeah.
My answer is a bullshit answer, but it is every single member of this cast in the last 20 minutes of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I absolutely adore the last 20 minutes of this movie. I think it is truly powerful and moving, and I legit cried when they fucking kneeled for the halflings.
My, like, friends, it was, you kneel for no one. That's like, God,
dude, I just got the chills again. Yeah, seeing the fucking hobbits finally standing above everybody else.
Yeah,
beautiful.
It's so wholesome, man.
Let me bathe.
But
them.
With that said, you know, I think acting genuinely happy is kind of one of the hardest things to do, and it is so unnatural. Especially because success and victory like this hasn't been felt by anyone, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So everyone's going so hard and every smile is so forced and kind of like, that's not a real smile.
The best one is when Frodo wakes up for the first time and he sees Gandalf and they just start laughing.
Yeah.
And Frodo's like,
it even cuts all goofy.
And that's the thing about, like, I agree with Elmer. I think that's, like, the hammiest scene of the entire trilogy.
They just, like, lower the focus a little bit, just the resolution,
it looks so soft. They lower the focus, they overexpose everything so that even the fucking, like, blankets are shining. But I kind of, I love it because after everything we've been through, I think this scene works for me in context. Like, you know, I've watched the scene multiple times on YouTube with no context. I'm like, okay, this is objectively hilarious. But, like, when you're in that movie after 3 hours of what we've just been through, that's all I want. I just want those characters to be happy. I just want them to be in bliss for the rest of their lives.
Right. Yes. I want them to have the real life version of wherever heroin gets you.
Exactly.
I want them to live in there.
And for Peter Jackson and team to have the foresight and confidence to know, like, A, we earn this, we deserve this. B, the audience earned this and deserve this. And C, like, we did some fucked up shit. We threw human heads over a tower, you know?
Yeah, like, it is. The last 20 minutes is the only reason why it wasn't an R-rated movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, like,
you gotta chill it out, man.
It is just so heartwarming. Like, it's corny to use that phrase, but that is what it is. It made everything okay.
It did. It's definitely way up there in terms of falling action. Like, you don't get a lot of movies that have a lot of, you know, denouement now. Mm-hmm. You know, they just kind of end. And it's like, oh, okay. Yeah, that was good. This really just, like, lets you take a deep breath. They're fine. Let's watch it play out. And it's going to be okay. Frodo's going to, you know, go to heaven or wherever the fuck.
Yeah. But and we're going to close out every thread for you because, yeah, you earned this. You did the whole, that was it. That was the whole story. We can just finish everything.
They're like, we're not going to make a fucking franchise out of this. There's no sequel to Lord of the Rings. This is it. This is the end. Here we go.
Yeah. It is true. So they're in the books. There is the penultimate chapter in Return of the King is called The Scouring of the Shire, where the hobbits make their way back to the Shire and they find that it's under the brutal control of some gangsters and their leader, Sharky. I'm not making this up. Who's revealed to be Saruman. So basically, like, the hobbits have to basically get all the hobbits to have a rebellion and fucking kill Saruman. So it's like, what a great foresight to take that out of the movie.
Yeah. Hey, that was so we could not that's wild. That Peter Jackson fucking improved Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Holy shit, Sam. Like, that was legit upsetting. I'm angry that I heard that was real, because that dramatically worsens, like, what these movies created. Like, I don't need to know, because what I kept telling Robert while we were watching these movies is I fucking love that if you live in this world, the history books have, like, Frodo Baggins is, like, the hero, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, sure, like, the other hobbits don't give a shit because they don't read and they're all just smoking weed all day. But, like, people that study history will know. You know, like, all of man kneeled for Frodo, Sam, and Merry and Poppin, you know? So it's...
Yeah.
I love that shit, and I didn't need that to be, like, hammered in a millionth time with, like, all the hobbits.
Exactly. And I didn't need to see a whole battle.
Yeah.
I think that it's... I'm very curious. I do want to read the books now. Because I wonder, like, how that works within the context of the novels. And I'm sure that there are, like, you know, there's even more World War II allegories you could pull from that story in, like, the way that Tolkien views it. But mm-hmm. I agree. I think that Jackson has improved these movies significantly by removing a lot of what Tolkien put in the original novels.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. All right, let's move on to the specialist special effect, the coolest effect in the movie. Some nominees, Mount Doom, that whole sequence for sure. The Minas Tirith, just the creation of that model.
What a beautiful city!
Yeah, the Army of the Dead. I'll throw that in there because they look pretty cool, and the entire orc army.
Yeah,
descending on Minas Tirith. I don't know anything else that you think I'm missing.
I think you gotta just get the fucking ghosts out of this conversation. It's disrespectful to everything else you might have left out. Like, the Ghostbuster ghosts look better than this, and you know they're fucking around with scale. They do some cute stuff with it here. They're gone fast. But
yeah, I think it's good just seeing them just descend and just rip the battlefield up.
Yeah, I mean,
that's no, I'm far, they're cool.
I was telling Elmer that scene. This movie straight up had, like, you know where Endgame pulled its fucking portals moment? It was from this movie when Aragorn jumps off the ship, pulls the sword out, and then just the army of ghosts runs off the ship after him and just starts decimating the orcs.
There are two portal moments. There's the moment when the Riders of Rohan come and meet them on the battlefield.
Yeah.
And then it happens for the other side when the Oliphants come. Yeah. Like, oh no, now they're here. And then it happens again for the good guys.
Again,
like,
dude, the pacing of the Battle of Minas Tirith is so fucking good. Even Fantastic. Better than Helm's Deep. But just
it's longer too.
Yeah. It's much like longer. it's like 2/3 of the movie.
Yeah.
But I love that, like, when the Riders of Rohan show up and they just cut a fucking, there's no strategy. They just cut a swath through the fucking orc army and they're just like, kill as many as you can.
Cavalry charge, break the ranks, get them fucked up.
God damn.
So good.
Yeah. I think for me, it's the city. The city, just look, those aerial shots.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks insane.
Dude, I remember when we started watching this movie, Elmer turned to me when they were doing, like, just the overview of Minas Tirith. And he was like, are you fucking kidding me, dude? This is where the finale of the trilogy takes place. The Battle of Minas Tirith. I'm like, yeah, this city looks fucking amazing.
It is a city fortress.
That aerial shot is such a money shot. Like, he knows. He's like, oh, yeah. I know you guys know we're going to fight here. You guys know this, right? Like, look at this shit.
We're going to trash this fucking place, man.
Oh, man. I think, honestly, I do want to give it to Mount Doom, though, just because maybe it's just, like, the emotions that it left in me, but, like, Mount Doom, it just looks so... They did such a good job with the atmosphere of that area. It looks just painful to exist. In that area. It's like the makeup so combined hot. With all like the physical effects, the fog, the rocks constantly falling. And for something that seems like in an Avengers movie, any like modern blockbuster, that would all be CG. But they just found a way to film it and make it look as real and physical and tactile as possible.
Yeah, you can just feel the rocks underneath their toes, like the gravel.
It's like, yeah, dude, I feel Samwise. Fucking his feet are probably on fire right now, but he's got hobbit feet so he can withstand it. And he's just going to carry his best friend to the top of the mountain to throw some shit in lava.
Oh, God. Amazing. All right. I think this is the hardest part. What's the most rewatchable scene?
I mean, it's just
I don't know
blurs
if I could even
together.
Put any. Yeah, any. I do love the speech that Gandalf gives to Pippin when Pippin's like, is this the end?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
No, no. Yeah. And then White Shores, like, and just
death is but
and he's like,
path.
Oh, I can start. You're like, okay, yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah.
It's so good, but it's also so sad because it's like, oh, he's just prepping this little hobbit to die.
Right, and he doesn't know what happens when the hobbits die.
Yeah.
He knows there's what happens when he dies.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's something so interesting about, like, how Gandalf... you know, I compared it last night to, you know, the cool thing about the Clone Wars where, like, the Jedis are generals because that's what, like, context called for.
Yeah.
You know, like, we just need this. You're the strongest people here, like... We got to win this with the war because it can't just be you. But there's something extra interesting about how Gandalf truly, like, treats it like a real war, even though we're talking about fucking magic and shit. Like, there is just a lot of restraint to, like, what he can do as a wizard, like, which makes him already more interesting. But the way he's just, like, getting everyone ready to die.
Prepare for
constantly.
Battle.
Yeah. And, like, he knows, like, this, a lot of people are going to die, but we have to do this. And just to have that level of wisdom reflected on screen, like, really sells him as a fucking wizard. Like, I don't know. Yeah. It's just such a cool character detail.
Well, and his whole mission, the only reason why he's in Middle Earth is because Manwë sent him to help the people, the free peoples of Middle Earth, defeat Sauron. So he's, like, at Minas Tirith, and he's like, guys, we're on the 10-yard line. We are so close, and then I get to go back home.
Explain who Manwë is, though.
So, in the beginning, there was Eru Iluvatar, who's, like, the big god. And he created these lesser gods, pantheon of gods. One of them is Manwë, who is, like, the head god. So there's Manwë, Mandos, a bunch of others, and then there's Morgoth. Morgoth is the bad god. Sauron is one of Morgoth's lieutenants. Mm-hmm. So Sauron is to Morgoth as Gandalf is to Manwë, basically.
Okay.
in a similar
good job explaining that.
Yeah. So basically, and that's where I like the Balrog, there are things that are evil in Middle Earth, like the Balrog, who is a servant of Morgoth, but doesn't give a fuck about Sauron. He's not in it for Sauron. Yeah. He's his own thing. He's like
old ancient demon.
Exactly. And so basically Manwë, realizing that Sauron was, you know, not finished, he was still gonna fuck stuff up, he sent through a bunch of wizards, the Istari, to help the people of men. And there are, I think there are six of them. There's Saruman, who fucked it up immediately. he was going to be the leader. He was the most powerful.
Yeah.
There's Gandalf the Grey. And they all have, like, elf names and shit. They actually refer to Gandalf by his, like, elf name a few times, Mithrandir.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Radagast the Brown, who's in the Hobbit movies.
Yeah. I kind of like Radagast.
Fucked off into the forest. And then there's like three other blue wizards who just fucked off and are never named. So Gandalf was like, he's like the guy when the group project comes down, he's the only one doing any of the work.
Yeah,
he's
the only one working. Yeah.
And on the day of the presentation, nobody else knows when to show up. So he's just there doing it all.
Wow.
That's why you got a promotion.
That made me like Gandalf more. You made up for revealing that ending.
Yeah, there it is. Gandalf's a fucking badass. Gandalf. And so that's why he gets to go back.
So you clearly know more about this lore. So then what is there definitively about where Gandalf goes off in the end with who goes with him? Frodo, Bilbo, and who else?
Oh, they go to the Elven homeland.
Elrond and et cetera.
And where they're
going back to the
Undying, Valari? The Undying Land.
Valerian. I think it's called Valerian, maybe?
No, Valerian's from Game of Thrones.
No, Valeria is from Game of Thrones. Like, I think that's how close it is.
Valerian Steel.
Right. No, but Valeria versus Valerian.
Right.
Like, I'm talking about separate places.
So you're telling me that George R. Martin just sort of plagiarized.
It's as far as it goes.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm trying to find, let's see, they go to Undying Lands, which are Valinor. Sorry, it's Valinor.
Okay.
Which is the realm of the Valar on the continent of Aman. So basically it's where all of like the gods live. So the gods created this place, and one thing led to another, it was perfect, but then the free peoples were corrupted by Morgoth and a few other things. So they all went to other places. And then now they're basically all kind of returning. So
gotcha.
He's going to live with all the other gods and do god shit.
Sick, man. I love that for Frodo.
Yeah, Frodo's going to a pretty sick place.
Yeah.
It kind of sucks they didn't invite anybody else. They're just like...
He's just adventuring.
I mean, I don't... Because no one had interest.
Frodo had PTSD, too. He's like, I have to leave the Shire. Like, I can't live here anymore.
True. Yeah, he's got the wound that doesn't heal. When he goes to the Undying Lands, I bet the gods will eventually they'll find a way to heal him.
Yeah,
they'll give him better weed.
Yeah,
yeah,
they'll have the best weed. Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
So, just a little context. I think the most rewatchable scene for me is the Pippin singing the song, and then them riding to Osgiliath.
I agree. I think that scene is a masterpiece on its own. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, if that comes on, I'm like, I guess I gotta watch this.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you see that on TNT, you're like, well, I guess I'm watching Return of the King for the rest of the day.
Yeah. Here we go.
Man, I legit cannot wait to rewatch these movies.
Oh, so fucking good.
What scene are you,
watch the extended editions now.
I'm in.
Next podcast starts next week.
Yeah, no, we're going over the Hobbits next week because Dan hasn't seen the Hobbits.
Yeah, I think that will be much less enjoyable. I think one of you guys can pick a trilogy that or a series of movies that you guys have seen that I've never seen. We'll get through this somehow.
I could be down for something where this is behind the scenes on viewing angles, but I'd be down for something not high fantasy, mixing it up. Mm.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. What are you thinking?
Pirates.
I don't know. I got to think about it.
I've seen Pirates.
Fuck.
My first two are, I know you've seen, but I'm just thinking something like, you know, Oceans, Rush Hour. I'm trying to think something out as far away from high fantasy as possible.
Right. I think, yeah.
Let's do on this.
Yeah, let's do. We'll keep that in. So any of you guys got any choices for most rewatchable scene?
I mean, I think it's the one you said.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just, there's so much of this movie blends together in a good way. But that yes. scene pops out as like a isolating moment that it almost feels like the only fair answer, you know, because it feels like it has a definitive start and end. And it's like it's this sequence right. specifically.
I think anytime the tide turns in, I think that like the Riders of Rohan coming during the Battle of Pelennor Fields is also
that's God also tier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say the only other scene that I think compares
death!
To the,
when they're all cheering death, just death.
Oh yeah,
death. And I was just like, holy shit! How do you get people jazzed up about dying? Yeah. Literally dying.
He's smacking all their spears with a sword.
Yeah.
Fuck. The only other scene I think that rivals the assault is probably Samwise's monologue. When Frodo passes out and he just ends like, oh, I can't carry your burden, but I can carry you.
Like, right.
Fuck, it's...
You remember the taste of strawberries?
Yeah.
Oh.
And Frodo's like, you're just like, I can't remember any of it.
Oh, that's the saddest fucking line, dude.
Yeah.
Oh,
see,
man.
The great eye, fire.
Yeah. You realize just how, like, what psychological toll this is taking on Frodo.
Yeah.
And how...
Sam's like, can you remember all this cool stuff? Frodo's like, not in your fucking life, man.
Yeah. God.
Love it.
I love this movie.
What a mess.
We haven't said that enough this episode.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're about to trash it.
Yeah. What don't you love about this movie?
Yeah, let's get in some nitpicks. Or I'll also, like, if there's any questions that you have that just, like, there are no answers, I think this would be a good time.
Yeah.
Come up with some.
Yeah, so here's my big one that I know has been asked multiple times that I don't think I've ever heard a satisfactory answer. Why the fuck don't they just ride the big eagles into Mordor?
Why do you think that would work?
Why wouldn't it?
Because they've got fell beasts. The Nazgul are literally on dragons.
Yeah, and the eagles wrecked them.
This is true.
They wrecked them when they're caught off guard. I think the Eye of Sauron. I think that you have the entire armies of Sauron. First of all, the eagles don't give a fuck about the War of the Ring.
No, but they're controlled by Radagast the Brown. And like he's a good friend of Gandalf. Like, that's what Gandalf was doing when he was sending the fucking moth off into the... Like, that's how he escaped from the tower. He was like, right, hey, Radagast.
It's different than the actual rings.
Yeah, I do like your answer about the eye. You know, because we do get a good sense of that, like, with the distraction. You know, mm-hmm. like, maybe they could have used them to their advantage as a distraction. But, you know, that eye sees a lot of things. It's gonna see some big ass eagles. I do. You know, I buy that.
And imagine if the because the lands of Mordor were completely empty. There was nobody there. They could fly. They're all getting thrown down. Imagine if you have catapults and arrows, and then at that point, like Sauron has the ring. He knows where it is. The whole point was they got to sneak the ring into Mordor.
Yeah, they could have just flown below the mountain range until they got to Mordor.
Nah, that's lame. And maybe it was also just new information. Maybe they didn't have they didn't have that information.
I mean, hey, I'm not like, I don't need logical explanations for everything in movies. Like this, like, regardless of the answer you give me, these are still great movies. It's like the whole Star Wars problem with like the hyperspace kamikaze. Like, no, dude, that shit is just fucking cool. Who gives a shit if it makes logical sense?
Yeah,
that
shit
makes so much sense. It's perfect.
It does make logical sense that the Eagles... Like the eagles, imagine if birds are like, where do birds go during forest fires? They just fly somewhere else. They figure it out. They fly somewhere else. Like if a whole continent is on fire, the Eagles are just gonna be like, we're gonna get as far away from this as possible.
Sure.
They don't want to fuck with this because they can always just fly back to a different continent. They can fly back to Valinor. You know, they've got no stake in it. They don't give a fuck.
Yeah, but the Eagles, like, they're not, like, only their own faction. They're also, like, heavily influenced by Radagast, which is why they went to fight the Nazgul and save Gandalf.
They're friends with Radagast. They're not... Yeah, they're not, like, under his control.
They're under his control.
No.
You haven't seen The Hobbit.
They're just friends, dude.
Yeah, they're all just friends. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I will get into a deeper lore check later on that, but that's still.
that's my big nitpick.
yeah, that's the classic nitpick of the Eagles. My big nitpick is that when Gollum starts talking about like Sam wanting to steal the ring and all this, and Frodo is just immediately like, Gollum's got to be telling the truth. Not Sam, who's been with me since the beginning. Like, Gollum, who's a known fiend. And I guess, like, the ring, you know, would have some effect on him.
To me, the ring was, like, the ring was siding with Gollum and influencing Frodo to believe, like, whatever was going to hurt him more and get him to lose the ring.
Yeah, I just feel like if Gollum's whole thing has been getting the ring back, and then suddenly he's like, hey, you know, Sam really wants the ring, man. Like, nah, Sam's chill. What are you...
Well, it's also like Gollum has saved Frodo multiple times. So Frodo has, like, you know, a sense of trust in this creature, as misplaced as it is.
True. Definitely consider that. I just think it's always strange how much they're willing to trust, like, Gollum. When he's obviously, like, the first time Sam hears it, like, hey, he's going to kill us in our sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard him say it, and Frodo's like, Sam, we can't. Like, Frodo just brushes it off so casually.
Yeah.
I think you have an out for each one of them, though, right? Like, Frodo is not himself.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the demons in him. And Samwise knows he has to stay by Frodo no matter what.
Yeah. I also think Samwise is more world-weary. He just seems to know people's intentions better than Frodo. Frodo's very naive.
That's actually a good point. Frodo likes to see the best in people.
Yeah, which is what makes him so, like, I'm sure that's part of, like, what makes him so resistant to the influence of the ring. He's, like, he's very incorruptible. But I think he also has...
He's corrupted by Gollum so easily.
Sure, yeah. He's not corrupted so much as tricked.
Yeah.
But I do think that another reason he has for defending Gollum is, like, he's like, Sam, I don't know where the fuck we are. You don't know where the fuck we are. Like, how are we supposed to get out of here without Gollum?
That is true. That's big.
Good. I like that.
It is, yeah. There is so much relying on, like, trust of people that you would never want to trust, which is... It's like we're literally in the worst possible.
I mean,
position.
I honestly think, like, I really, like, I wish there were more interviews with Tolkien about this work, because it honestly feels like something that could have happened in World War II, where he's like, yeah, we just came across soldiers from another faction, and we didn't know how much we could actually trust them, but we had to because they knew the land more than we did.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I think they have German accents, but maybe it's Belgium accents.
They might have Russian accents. Who knows?
Exactly. Any other nitpicks or unanswerable questions? I feel like this is generally pretty good. I think that another, maybe, like, Denethor is... He's a little, like, too shielded from reality. Like, he is so like, oh, my son's dead. And he's like, no, he just needs medicine. He's just like, fuck you. Like, let me kill my son. Like, let me set my son on fire.
He breaks immediately.
Yeah, he's like the Fellowship, because the first sign of adversity and he's broken.
Yeah,
he's
and
in
I,
pieces.
I do wonder if, like, I want to know how he's portrayed in the book. I want to know how he's portrayed in the extended cut. I wonder if, like, it adds any more to his current mental state. But yeah, in this film, I do think that he kind of just goes mad immediately. And I'm sure part of it is the impending doom of knowing that not only is, like, you know, Sauron is coming back to power, but the heir of man is also riding with Rohan, who is now on his way to the kingdom to claim my power.
Yes, exactly. I don't know. I really don't have anything else. I think it's a pretty rock solid movie.
Yeah. I think minor thing is the CG. Yeah. I think there is more CG in this film than any of the other ones.
Yeah.
It's like, for a movie that's like 17 years old, it's really fucking good. Really but good. It definitely has aged a little bit.
Yeah, especially some of the in the very bright overexposed scenes.
Yeah.
You're just like, dude, that looks shit like, does not.
I was thinking
that's
more
my actual nitpick.
The overexposure.
Yeah. It's just so much. Like, I get that it like was meant to serve as a device for the elvish and the holy, but it was awful. It was killed. Like, it was just so not good.
I thought the pretty overwhelming. Looked kind of pretty CG. Like, as cool Janky. As
they were,
yeah, as cool as Legolas's like solo elephant kill was, I'm still just like, this I don't think is as cool as the skateboarding shield scene, because they didn't even use a stuntman for it. Like, it was all CG.
Yeah, him sliding is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Sliding down the trunk.
Yeah.
But it was fucking cool.
Oh, yeah. It was cool as fuck. It is like vaguely racist too, where you're like, these very obviously like Middle Eastern people. It's like, yeah, these are the bad guys.
Oh yeah, he like, clearly fought some Middle Eastern mercenaries in World War II.
Yeah, Assyrians and whatnot.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if we're gonna end it there, I've got a little bit of trivia for us to close it out. See how well we can do. All right. The Lord of the Rings trilogy, I'm going to start with this, became the most nominated film franchise in Academy Award history with how many nominations?
Fuck.
This surpassed the Godfather trilogy and the Star Wars film franchise.
Well deserved. For all three movies, how many nominations?
Are we just going to go to whoever's closest?
Yeah, that sounds good.
I'm going to go with 18 nominations for the whole franchise.
What about you, Elmer?
I'm going to give you my real answer, even though I could just say 19. 23.
30. What?
Ooh. 30 nominations for the
show. Holy shit.
Elmer has moved above Robert. Elmer's 4, Robert's 3.5.
Ouch.
All right.
Okay, this is a pretty good trivia. All right. The movie made how much percent profit for New Line Cinema on their initial outlay? This is in percentage points. I'll give you the over-under. The over-under is 1,200%. 1,200%. Is it more than that or is it less than that in profit?
Is it the whole trilogy or just this movie?
The movie.
Just the movie? I'm going to go under.
I'm going to go over because let's make this a game.
Oh, Elmer gets it again. It made a 1,408%
that's
profit for
crazy.
New Line Cinema.
Is New Line Cinema still a thing?
All right, I'll get okay. So, know. I've got one regular piece of trivia, and then we can have like a tiebreaker. Whoever gets it, we'll do a winner takes all. So, special care was taken to make sure that the destruction of Sauron's Tower of Barad-dûr did not resemble the destruction of the World Trade Center. For this reason, it disintegrates from the ground up, and the sound was made from breaking glass, so it would not look or sound like if it was exploding.
Wow. This is true or false?
No, that's true. That's just regular true. There's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Well, it's wild that the movie The Two Towers came out the year after 9/11. And they just didn't change it. They're just like, nah, fuck it.
I mean, what were they going to change it to? It had already been written, you know?
That's like, true.
I know. It would have been really, like, a total bitch move, and, like, you can't, you actually just can't do that. But it's still crazy to think that they did.
Yeah.
Truly, truly, truly.
Spider-Man 1 is the only other one I can think of that had, like, a big movie that had
the Twin Towers
do something
removed.
About 9/11.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had to just CG them out of every shot.
True, true, true. Okay, there is. This is gonna be the last piece of trivia. So, Return of the King won a record amount of the highest clean sweep in Oscar history with 11 Academy Awards, tying the record by Ben Hur and Titanic. Return of the King is also only the second sequel to win an Oscar for Best Picture, after Godfather Part 3.
Wait, Godfather Part 3 won Best Picture?
Or Godfather Part 2.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
The Fellowship of the Ring won 2 Oscars that The Return of the King was not even nominated for. What were those Oscars?
Fuck you.
Or no, sorry. Fellowship of the Ring won one, and The Two Towers won the other. Both were nominated for Oscars that the other two were not. And both of them won them. Which Oscars were they? Yeah.
This is like a math question.
I think Return of the King did not win for best score, or wasn't even nominated for best score. And I don't think it was nominated for... Fuck. Best editing? Best sound mixing? Fuck! I don't. This is so hard.
You already had your guesses.
I know.
Score is a really good one. That really altered what I was thinking.
So I'll give you a point for saying what it wasn't nominated for. I'll give you another point for saying which of the other ones won it. So Robert,
which
you
movie?
Say score and editing?
Yeah. So Fellowship of the Ring, and it won best score.
Correct.
And then I think The Two Towers won for best edit, or was nominated for best editing.
Both of the ones that The Return of the King was not nominated for, the other two won. Not the same award, but I'll give you a point for guessing which one Return of the King was not nominated for, and then I'll give you another point if you can guess which of the other two won it. Elmer, what are your guesses?
Score is really good because it makes sense that it's the same score. I'm sure there's a couple new themes in there, but it's still the same score. It must have won production. It must have won visual effects. Is it going to be one of the actor ones?
I can't tell you.
I literally just don't even have a guess. I can't do this.
Okay, well, no points for anybody.
Okay.
because Return of the King was not nominated for Best Cinematography or Sound Editing.
Oh, wow.
Fellowship of the Ring won Best Cinematography, and Two Towers won Best Sound Editing. Here are the Academy Awards that Return of the King won. One of the great, like, craziest sweeps. Best Picture, Best Director, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Art Direction, Best Costume Design, Best Film Editing, Best Makeup, Best Original Score, Best Original Song, Best Sound Mixing, and Best Visual Effects.
You love to see it.
That's all of them, except the acting ones.
Right. The only Lord of the Rings movie that had a nomination for acting was Fellowship of the Ring, where Ian McKellen was nominated for Best Supporting Actor.
I mean, he only gets better, so it's kind of a joke.
Yeah, let's see. I'll give you guys another one since you guys both
fucked it.
Let's see. I'm trying to even think of a good one for the good Oscar. Let's see. Return of the King. I'll see who. There's nothing that's there. All these would be way too hard, I feel like. Because since they won so much. Yeah, actually, yeah, I don't know. These were the movies that were nominated for Best Picture. I just think this is cool. Lost in Translation, Sofia Coppola. Master and Commander, Far Side of the World.
Great film.
Mystic River. And Seabiscuit.
I mean, it really didn't have any true competition.
I don't know why Seabiscuit seems so out of place in that lineup. Yeah.
I think, it is crazy that, like, I would say at least two of these are consistently in the conversation of, like, classic movies. I would say Mystic River and Master and Commander are both fantastic as well.
Right. But it's one of those years where, like, yes, the right movie won.
Yeah.
You know? And I feel like, especially lately, that's been, I mean, Parasite, just God bless. But, you know, I feel like the last couple of years before that, it's been, what the hell's going on here? This doesn't add up.
Yes.
Yeah. There's so much. Here's some other facts. Best actor, Sean Penn for Mystic River. Johnny Depp was actually nominated for Pirates of the Caribbean.
Was he?
Oh, wow.
I had no idea. I didn't know that fucking Pirates was an Oscar-nominated film. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think it has a couple of, like, VFX and score, and I think it definitely has, like, some of the technical ones.
Nominated for 5 Oscars. Yeah, best actor in a leading role. God damn, that's fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm. Earned.
Charlize Theron won for Monster. Her first Oscar.
Yeah.
Tim Robbins won for Mystic River as well. And then Renee Zellweger, who won an Oscar when Fellowship of the Ring was nominated. She won for Chicago. And then for Return of the King, she won for Cold Mountain.
Wow. Hmm. I mean, there are no women in these movies, so, you know, those aren't categories that they even had a chance in.
Right, yeah. But, who are they going to have? Eowyn, the woman who played Eowyn?
Yeah, she is no man.
Yeah, she was no man. That's true.
But even with all the male actors, it's still like, who is the actual, like, who's supporting, who's not
who's supporting?
Who's supporting
who? Yeah.
Yeah, like, I think that alone, that clusterfuck, kind of probably turned a lot of people off into even.
All I'm saying is Sean Austin should have been nominated at least.
At least for best supporting actor, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's my performance of the movie.
Aged so very well. All right, guys, we've wrapped it up. The trilogy, Lord of the Rings, it's in the books.
Yeah.
We'll have to find out, everybody tweet at us what you want us to do next. We'll probably ignore it unless it's really good, and then we'll pretend like we never read your tweet and take it for our own.
Exactly. Unless you subscribe to our $5 Patreon tier, you can take a credit as executive producer of the podcast.
You can buy back your own suggestions.
Exactly. Yes.
And you get the rights to my always streaming webcam.
Yeah. Hollywood accounting, baby.
That's Hollywood, baby.
Man. Yeah. Please tweet at us trilogy suggestions, though, because I'm super curious to see if there are any other trilogies that we just didn't name that you think are on the same level as Lord of the Rings.
And don't even think about saying Shrek, because Robert and I just watched those.
Yeah.
And it's up there.
Yeah, and really, like, there are only two Shrek movies. There are only two Shrek movies. So
there's three. There's three.
Right. There's two and a half.
Yeah.
It sounds like.
It's like Shrek 1.5.
I can meet you at
Shrek,
2.5.
Shrek 2.5.
So you guys aren't counting Puss in Boots.
No.
No, I mean, that's just a spinoff. But, I mean, three is hot shit, and you should never watch that movie. But I think four is a nice, you know, puts a nice little bow on everything.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Maybe I will have to watch. I've never seen three or four.
I loved revisiting one and two.
Yeah.
But you can actually skip three because four pretends three didn't happen, basically.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, for the most part. Like, actually, completely. But four, I think there's, you know.
Yeah. It's a movie. Some gems. It's a real movie.
I love that. I love that for Shrek. All right, boys. It's been fun. But we'll catch you all next week with something completely different.
Yeah. Time for a reset. watching The Hobbit.